So we're about halfway through December already. Nine days till Christmas. We ready? No. Yes. This side, no. This side, yes. Anyone want to switch sides this morning? I want to invite you to turn to the book of Matthew chapter 2. And as we get started here this morning, this is week 3 of Advent here at Awaken. Advent, this season of preparation, expectation, waiting, the season of longing as we prepare our hearts for Christmas, which is quickly coming up, is it not? So as we continue with our Advent series on hope, what is hope? What does hope look like? How do we obtain hope in this world that we live in? I want to draw your attention to a few things here as we get started. First, on Sunday, January 13th, the Awaken Dojo part two of four. Back in October, I believe, we had our first dojo, which was a time of teaching, a whole bunch of discussion, conversation, which went on, which everyone said that was the best part of it, which is great because that's the point, that we can get together and talk through what's happening in our lives, throw hopefully a bunch of good questions out to get you thinking about things, and then a couple of practices as well, all with the hope, all with the idea of you achieving transformation. So how are we transformed? How are we transformed in our lives? So the second part of the dojo is going to be on Sunday, the 13th of January, 1 to 3. We'll do it at Hillside Church again, which is in Armonk, about 20 minutes north of here. So if you didn't join us for the first one, you are more than welcome to come to part two. We'll have a sign up in the newsletter, and I do not have a sign up in the back table today, but I'll make sure we have one next week as well. And I hope to see you there. It's going to be a lot of fun. We had a great time a couple months ago, and this one will be, maybe we're here, and maybe we'll take it up to the next level for part two, if you know what I'm saying. So Awaken Dojo, part two, the 13th of January. And then we have our Hope Sightings box, beautifully decorated by Mary, is it not? It just brings me hope looking at this box. A nice sparkly box. I would never have been able to get the corners like that, so thank you. I appreciate it. And as I mentioned early on in Advent, the first week, we are going to be keeping this box on our back table all of the 4 weeks of Advent. And what this box serves as is a hope sightings box. So what does that mean? It means that any time that you come across something that brings you hope in your week, I want you to capture it, whether you write it in your phone, write it down in a journal, take a picture of it, and then either print it out, write it on a piece of paper, which we have a whole bunch of slips of paper on the back table, print the photo out, bring the photo, and place it into this box. It can be very easy in the world we live in to focus on the darkness that we see around us. So during this Advent season, we are intentionally focusing our gaze on the light. So where are you seeing signs of light breaking through the darkness? And as I said a couple weeks ago, my prayer for us this Advent season is that we would all be infused with more hope, which I think is something we could all use a little more of, is it not? My prayer has been that the needle on your hope gauge would ever so slowly begin creeping towards the full mark. And what we'll do is next week, hard to believe we're already here, but next week we'll be opening the box and we'll be reading all of your stories together. Now, I know a lot of you will be traveling next week. Have no fear because we have our video friend right here in front of us. So what I'll do is I will clip that part of our service and I will place it in the newsletter. So if you can't be here, you can go on to the YouTube and we will have the video clip of all your stories. So you have one more week to look for hope. Capture as many stories as you can. And I'll also put a link in the newsletter. So if you're not going to be here next week, but you come across something, we want to hear your story. So there will be a link in the newsletter where you can send me your story. You can keep it anonymous. And I'll make sure that I print it out, bring it with me. And as I've been saying all along, my hope is that that box would be overflowing, that the top wouldn't even be able to fit on there any longer. because of all the stories of hope that we as a community have been collecting over these 4 weeks. Now, as we dive into the third week of Advent this morning, I want to ask a simple yet difficult question. And the question is, if we go to the next slide, why can hope be so difficult to obtain, especially in this modern world that we live in? Why can hope be so difficult to obtain? And what I want to do this morning is I want to take a look at a very familiar Christmas story, one that you've probably read, you've heard every single year that you've celebrated Christmas. And what I want to do is I'm going to walk you through this story. I want to make a couple of observations, and I want to show you how this story pertains to hope. So Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem, and they asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose, and we have come to worship him." Now, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel." Go to the next slide. The story continues. "Then Herod called the Magi secretly, and he found out from them the exact time that the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, and he said, 'Go and search carefully for the child. And as soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him.' Now, after they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts." Which, if anyone's wondering what to get me for Christmas, gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I'll be in the back after the service. "And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route." These 12 verses, the Magi are the main characters of this story. Yet the Magi are clothed in mystery and uncertainty. Who are the Magi? Where do they come from? What is their identity? How did they know to follow this star in the first place? And how many Magi were there? Now, I know we all know the song, "We Three Kings of Orient Are Traveling," right? But yet, the Bible doesn't tell us how many Magi there actually are. The fact that there's three, that there are kings, well, that's all been passed down to us by a tradition that was formed after Matthew's gospel. And to just mess with you a little bit more, the Magi, they weren't there on the day that Jesus was born. So all of your manger scenes, hate to break it to you, yeah, we fudge the details a little bit. But as we read here, Jesus was born, and then the Magi have this journey after. So they come upon Jesus a few weeks, years, some time after Jesus was born. We really don't know too much about who the Magi are, and this goes also for where they come from. Matthew tells us they come from the east, but is that Babylon? Is it Persia? Arabia? Matthew doesn't seem to care too much where these Magi was from, only that they have been on a journey. Maybe we could say that the only definite thing that we know about the Magi, or one of the only concrete things that we know about the Magi, is that they had to go on a journey in order to find Jesus. Now, when we think about journeys back at this time, they were a lot more difficult than the journeys that we go on today. Think about it. When you want to go on a journey, you go to your computer, you jump online, you buy a plane ticket where you can even pick your seat right there on your computer so you know exactly if you'll be sitting in an emergency exit and paying $25 extra for that seat. Maybe you'll be sitting in the back of the plane. You can have a window seat, an aisle seat. Then you, on the day of your flight, you drive to this airport. You drop off your luggage. You get in this long line where you go through some body scanner that I don't even want to know what that thing's doing to my body. Better not to ask. You get corralled into a metal tube where you go up in the sky, fly a few hundred miles an hour, 30,000 feet up in the air, with some guy who's hacking up a lung five rows in front of you. You know what I'm talking about? You ever been there? Or you have the two-year-old who's kicking your seat, and you're wondering, where are their parents? Journeys back then, hard to believe, but they were way more exhausting than the journeys that we go on today. The journeys back then, they were much longer. There were no Howard Johnsons along the way, so if you are making your way across the country, you couldn't just stop at the closest hotel and camp there for the night. You were forced to rely on the hospitality of strangers, which can be quite difficult if you are traveling in a foreign land where you know no one and you don't speak the language, there's no translator, and you don't actually understand their customs. So probably most nights, if you're going on a journey of this caliber, you're going to be braving the elements. And let me just say this, the desert gets pretty cold in the middle of the night. If you're taking a journey in the first century, you're going to have to do a whole lot of more planning. You can't just throw a couple of things in your suitcase and then jump in the car, call an Uber, and take off. You're going to be probably spending weeks just preparing for the trip to make sure that you don't run out of food. Probably about the same time you're going to be preparing if you have young children, a couple of weeks, maybe a few months. And then think about this. Journeys back in the first century, they were probably, most likely there were caravans, which meant there was a whole lot of people that were traveling with you. And if you've ever traveled with a group of people before, you know this. The more people in your caravan, the more drama there is. Anyone ever been there before? Like three or four, all right, we can do it. Seven or eight, nine, 10, all right, now we're pushing it a little bit. So a caravan of 20, 30 people, things might get a bit dicey on that trip. And then also in the first century, the roads were quite dangerous. Actually, some of the roads in Israel were known for being filled with robbers. You might come around a twist or a bend in the road, and there's a few people who are waiting there to steal what you have. It was known that there are certain roads in Israel that were quite dangerous, which is great if you're a local to know which roads to avoid. But if you're a foreigner from the east, and if you don't know where you're going, there's a good chance that you might run into some shady fellows looking to steal your wallet. I know this is, right, there's no Google Maps, just so we're all clear on this one. The Magi weren't following Siri or Alexa or whoever else is speaking to them. Judy, what's the name of the, can't you have a British male or a British female? Can't you choose who speaks to you? They had a star instead of a voice. And there was no Rand McNally atlases at the time in the world either. So they were pretty much on their own, just following this star. Imagine, this would have been like tourists in New York City without a map, wondering how do we get where we're going. This is the journey that the Magi would have undertaken. So maybe at this point in the story, you're asking yourself, why would anyone take on such a journey? Scholars speculate that the journey of the Magi might have been anywhere from a few months to a few years. Why would anyone ever want to undertake a journey of such magnitude unless there was something that they were hoping to find at the end of the road? See, for the Magi, again, we don't know how long their journey lasted. We don't really know too much about this star. All we know is that this star appeared, but when exactly did the star appear? Did the star appear right when Jesus was born? Did it appear a few months, maybe a few years before Jesus was born? And so the Magi had been traveling all this time, even though Jesus might not have been born yet, they were planning, looking up at the stars, looking at the sky, trying to figure out, hey, our tradition tells us that when this star appears, we got to get going. We got to jump on our horses and get moving. But we don't know exactly how long the preparation was or how long the journey was. And what we also know about this journey is that it clearly had a few setbacks along the way. See, in verse 2, if we go to the next slide, what we're told is the Magi stopped and they asked Herod for directions. Hey, where's the one who's been born king of the Jews? We saw his star. It's almost as if the star has disappeared for a time. And they're a bit disoriented. They're a bit lost. They don't know exactly where to go. The star has led them this far, but then it's almost as if the star has disappeared, because think about it. You have to be pretty lost to ask for directions. Anyone else like me, you're really bad at asking for directions? Like famous last words, no, I know exactly where we are. But wait, haven't we passed that camel rest stop like 7 times before? No, it's a different one. I swear, I promise. Yeah, they had been pretty desperate to ask for directions. Because then what we're told in verse 9, after they heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them. The star disappeared for a while. They asked for directions, and then the star seemed to reappear. So for a time, the Magi were lost. They were confused, wondering, did we bet on the wrong star? Did we place all of our hope on the star, and it was actually the wrong one? We were looking for this. Maybe our tradition was wrong. The star is going to lead us all the way here, but then it's going to abandon us at this time when we are so close. For a while, they're left there wondering, what are we doing here? Why did we even go on this journey? Now, think about the Magi's journey, this one of determination, long-suffering, the ability to withstand setbacks and disappointments. And then think about the world that we live in today. Think about the modern world that we live in. The modern world is a world of convenience and speed. I would actually suggest that the mantra of the modern world goes something like this. Is that not the mantra of the world that we live in? I want it all. Not just once, 3 times I want it all, and I want it now. We live in a world where we are instantaneously expected to get that which we hope for. Anyone else, you're like me. Your phone doesn't load quick enough, the website you're trying to get, so you keep hitting refresh multiple times, thinking that somehow hitting that refresh button is going to speed it up a little bit. And we've come a long way. What do we have, 5G now? Is that what we're using? Have we not come a long way from dial-up? Anyone else remember the and you're just, please connect. The world just keeps moving quicker. Soon enough, Amazon 2-day shipping is going to be obsolete because drones will be delivering whatever you order within a few hours of when you hit purchase. Our world keeps moving quicker and quicker and quicker. Now, this is great if you run out of paper towels or toilet paper, but how does this affect all the things that we hope for in life? How does this affect our dreams? When we're told, when we live in a world that says you can have whatever you want, whenever you want it, and you shouldn't have to work too hard for it, it's almost as if that way of thinking sets you up for heartbreak. Because the things that you most long for in life, the things that you hope for deep within you, very rarely can they be found with just a one-click purchase? More often than not, your prayers do not show up on your doorstep within 2 days. Yet this is the world we live in. And when we view our entire life through this lens of convenience and speed, and we deserve what we want when we want it, it sets us up almost for hope to leave us. See, for the Magi, they were playing by a different game. I would argue that the Magi are playing by a long game rather than the short game of the world that we live in. In order to have hope, you must have perseverance, determination, grit, the fortitude to withstand all the times that you're left wondering, what happened to that star that I was following? And the problem is, our modern world doesn't teach us these things. Yet this is how the Magi lived. This is what allowed them to travel on this journey that lasted for months, for years. Who knows how many generations were searching the sky, waiting for the star. Was this a hope that was passed down from one generation to the next? We don't know much about the Magi, but one thing I think we can say is that the Magi were seekers. They were searchers. They were looking for something. There was a longing deep within them. And I believe that the Magi are no different than you and me today. When they were journeying to Jesus, they brought with them all of their hopes and dreams. There's some hopes we have that are fairly recent, hopes that we've acquired within the recent year. Then there's other hopes we carry with us, and we've been carrying them around for years, hoping, praying, longing for them to come true. And then we have our hopes from younger days that are no longer a reality. Broken hopes, broken dreams, things we longed for years ago that never came to pass. And we look around, we realize that those dreams might never come true. I'd suggest that these are the hopes and dreams that the Magi are carrying with them to Jesus. And I believe that they were hoping for and longing for the same things that we are today. They're hoping for someone to come and to bring peace to all the anxiety and the restlessness and the despair that we carry in our bones. They're longing for someone to take our pain, our broken dreams, our shattered hopes, and transform them into something beautiful. In some way, to take all the pain that we've been through in life and turn it into something good for ourselves and for the world. I believe what the Magi is looking for is they were longing for someone, hoping for someone to breathe hope back into their soul. Someone to breathe resurrection into all the places within us that have gone dead. They were hoping for someone to come and put us back together in the places of our lives that are the most broken. I believe the Magi were hoping for someone to come and show acceptance, love, to extend grace to all the areas of our lives where we feel that we've blown it the most, where we feel like we've just gone off the rails a bit. See, I believe the Magi 2,000 years ago, they were looking for someone to come and rescue them. which is what we all hope for today, is it not? Someone to come and liberate us from all the destructive beliefs and attitudes and behaviors that hold us bondage to ourselves and to others. What the Magi were looking for is a king, someone who would usher this world into a new era of peace, a world where no one goes hungry at night, a world where no one is shot in a shopping mall, where children, all children, can grow up to be thriving men and women. They were hoping for a savior, a liberator, a redeemer to come and lead all of us into a world that is filled with dignity and respect for all people, regardless of gender, skin color, religion. See, what the Magi were looking for is the same thing I believe that we are all looking for this Christmas season. A God who journeys with us. A God who doesn't just abandon us or leave us here in this world in the midst of the pain and the darkness that we see around us, but rather a God who comes in the flesh to show us the infinite love and value that we all possess. A God that comes and breaks through the darkness to show us that this world is still beautiful, and this world is still good, and this world is still filled with hope, and this world is worth saving and redeeming. I believe this is why the Magi journeyed however many hundreds, if not thousands of miles, to come to find Jesus. I believe this is why the Magi spent all those hours preparing, waiting. They were willing to play the long game, to not give into a world of convenience and speed, but to build perseverance and grit and determination and to be in it for the long haul. When I was in fifth grade, there was a poem that our fifth grade teacher made us learn together. And you know how there's some things that you remember from your childhood and they just seem to pop up every now and again? For me, this poem is one of the things that I will always remember. It's almost as if whenever I need to be reminded of its truth, the words come flooding back in my mind. It's by a famous poet, maybe you've read this poem before, by Langston Hughes. And here's the poem. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for when dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. Maybe we could read this poem another way this morning. Hold fast to hope, for if hope dies, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to hope, for when hope goes, life is a barren field frozen with snow. Hope. Hold on to hope. For when you lose hope, when hope goes, you're living, but it's like a hollow, empty sort of living. Hope is what fueled the Magi. Hope is what kept them going. Hope, despite what they saw in front of them, despite the fact that everything wasn't going as quickly as they may have wanted, hope that things were going maybe a little differently than what they had expected, they held on to hope no matter how long it would take them to get to Jesus. Hope is what keeps your heart alive. It's what keeps your heart fresh. It's what keeps your heart soft and open to what it is that is beautiful in the world around you. So as we close here this morning, I want to celebrate Eucharist. And as we do this, I want you to imagine the Magi coming forward to Jesus. Just imagine this journey. They're at the end. They finally have reached their destination. They're tired, exhausted, filthy. Who knows the last time they had a bath? The star is finally right there in front of them. They proceed forward to Jesus, bringing with them all their hopes, all their dreams, everything that they have carried with them for thousands of miles. As you come forward this morning, what hopes and dreams do you bring to the table? What longings do you carry with you deep within your soul? What are you asking God for this Christmas season? Where in your soul do you need a fresh breath of hope? The invitation this morning is to bring all your hopes and dreams to this God who journeys with you, this God who is ever for you, this God who never leaves you. That even when it feels dark, even when the star has disappeared and you have to stop to ask for directions, the invitation is to trust that despite what you see in front of you, the light is still breaking through. And there is still beauty and goodness in this world. Let me pray for us here this morning. God, we come to you this morning. And God, for some of us, it's been a long, hard, difficult journey. And God, just as the Magi, as they traveled this long journey thousands of years ago, God, we are placing all of our hope in you. God, we're placing all of our dreams in you. So God, I pray that as we come forward this morning, God, I ask that you would breathe fresh hope into our bodies. God, if there's any areas of our lives that have become hardened or bitter, God, I pray that you would begin to soften those areas. God, I pray that we as a community would be able to play the long game as the Magi. God, that we wouldn't be sucked into this culture of convenience and speed, but rather that we would persevere. God, that we would be granted greater determination, more grit, to keep walking one foot in front of the other. God, even when it feels as if we don't know where we're going, God, may we keep moving. May we keep hope alive within us. God, may we be a people who hold fast to hope no matter what we face. And as we do so, God, I pray that your Spirit would carry us. God, that your Spirit would lead us. God, that your Spirit would strengthen us in the times that we feel weak. God, and that we would be carried on our journeys. So I pray that as we come to the table this morning, may you speak a fresh word over us here today. We pray, we ask this in the name of Jesus. Amen.